Here we go.
Everybody is just on their feet screaming, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
This is the Puck Podcast.
I was very entertained and excited. I couldn't believe how good it was.
Shut your yap.
This is the Puck Podcast.
There's a point where it just becomes absurd.
That was gutless. Gutless.
This is the Puck Podcast.
Hi, I'm Wayne Gretzky, and you're listening to The Real Great One.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhan.
Okay, guys, show us what you got.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhan. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast. It's Wednesday, March the 6th, 2024. On this week's show, in the first period, we'll discuss the past week on and off the ice in the NHL, including another coaching change and a major signing. In the second period, we'll look at who are buyers and who are sellers at the upcoming trade deadline and what has happened so far, and things are starting to heat up as we speak. And in the third period, we will read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. But before we get into all that, time for our traditional off-ice report. A couple of minutes about what's been going on with us over the last week, and I bring in my co-host, Doug Stolhan. Hello, Doug.
Hello, Eddie.
How are you, sir?
You know the answer to that. I am dandy.
Pleased to hear it.
Yes. So the off-ice report, what's going on in our lives, I will just say this. You and I both live in Southern California, have for many, many years. I've born and raised here. You lived here for, 30 years now? 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
20 plus years? And one thing, I don't know if this is everywhere, but it's definitely a Southern California thing. You turn on the news, and if there is a police chase, cancel everything else. We're going to watch that the entire time. And I absolutely hate it because it's not news. And you sent people out to work on stories, to do things that actually matter in the community, and you've blown them all out because some jackass is fleeing the police for, you know, just because they know once they get caught, they're going to jail. So may as well get a couple more minutes of freedom and a little bit of attention. And now it's become a thing where you get attention. So there's a police chase on, and I hate it. It's been going on for like 30 minutes or more. And it's just not relevant news to the general public. It's news to people and that specific part of the road, and that's it. And they're not watching TV, by the way. They're driving.
Yeah, I think it's a bigger deal in Southern California than it is anywhere else because of all the freeways we have. It certainly gets ratings, which is why they show up the way they do. And
I hate it though, because it's not relevant.
What the best part is the commentary from the people in the newsroom. It is because they have no idea what's going on. And it's just, it's just the same nonsense.
Yep. They don't know who's in the car. They don't know why they're fleeing. And it's just, it looks like he's heading north now on the 710. That's heading towards Placentia. That's getting into, you know.
Yeah.
Who cares? Who cares?
Well, I am not dandy, and I'm not here to complain.
I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah. I've been sick for like a month, and it's not. Not sick enough to really change my life, just sick enough for it to be annoying. So going to the doctor on Friday, and I'm sure as you know, making a I could have gone to an urgent care.
Right.
But, you know, making an appointment with your doctor, it's not like, oh, yeah, come in tomorrow. You know, it's, we've got an appointment in a month.
Right.
So
which is one of the arguments I always love against socialized medicine. Is that the people in socialized medicine countries, Canada, Europe, Australia, they wait months to see their doctor. So do we. Call a dermatologist. See when you can get in. It'll be months. Call a podiatrist. It'll be months. Yeah, you said, urgent care, emergency room, of course you can go in that day. But if it's just the, hey, I want to get something checked out, I will see you in a few months. Yeah, they're never like, well, come on down, sir.
It's been weird too, because it started off with just like a gravelly throat, and then now I'm starting to actually sneeze and have a runny nose. And after like over a week and a half of not having any kind of symptoms like that, And if it like started off, I had body like chills and body aches.
Were they multiplying?
What do you mean?
I got chills. They're multiplying.
Oh, wow. Good one, I guess. I did go to the movies this week.
For those that don't know, that's from the movie Grease.
Yes.
Or the musical Grease.
Of course they all know. They're all cool like us. I went to the movies for the first time in quite a while. The
entire, yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right.
I went and saw Dune Part 2.
Yep.
And loved it. It was about 2.5 hours long. My wife thought it was very, very slow for most of the movie. And then it picked up at the end, obviously, because there's a sort of conclusion, I guess. But I loved it. I don't mind a slow movie if it's doing, you know, really good kind of character building and showing right. you how this person becomes this person. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, this, you know, for not to spoil it, but you know, there's this young man who's kind of becoming this great leader and he has to win the trust of these people. And it just, you know, for it to happen in 10 minutes would make no sense. Right. Or
right.
them just showing a montage.
Right,
you know,
of
or
him,
something
of
like,
him fighting and yeah, showing him how to do things.
It would not fit with the movie that's taking, you know, two movies to tell a story of one book. And
right.
So I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So
I would imagine much like the, and I've never seen them because I am not a fantasy genre, but the Lord of the Rings took its time telling a story.
Sure.
Of an evolution.
Sure. Yeah.
You could cram that into one movie.
Yeah.
And it would be terrible.
Yeah.
And it would be nonsensical.
So you had not seen the first Dune movie.
First Dune movie with Kyle MacLachlan and Sting.
Oh, now that's yeah.
I saw that, you know, I think I watched that during the pandemic when I heard this one was coming out. No, I had not seen the first one with Timothy Chalamet, who is a fantastic actor, by the way.
He is, yeah. The cast is insane.
Yeah, there's a few people that I'll see a movie if they're in it just because they're in it, and he's one of them.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic.
So you will be seeing Wonka?
Wonka, if it's made for adults, I will use that disclaimer.
Hmm.
I do not watch children's movies because I'm not a child and I don't have kids. So I don't watch stuff that is made for wee little minds. But if it's like Call Me By Your Name, I watched that. It was very good as far as his performance. Armie Hammer was actually very good. He'll never work again, but not in major films at least. But I like him. Adam Driver is another one I'll see anything he's in. Because he's fantastic. Christian Bale, again, fantastic. Tom Hardy. Yeah, there's a few. And so I've seen some really weird movies as a result from those guys. And but they are always good. It's the Edward Norton, Gene Hackman. The movie may not be good, but they will be good. So
yeah, it's funny. I saw something with Matt Damon, and he was talking about how, you know, he's made some bad movies, which yep. Everyone has, if you've worked with any, you know, for right. any length of time. But I had forgotten some of the ones he had done, and they were showing a little montage of some of the movies he was in that were not good. And I was like, wow, I have forgot. You think about him. He's like an A-list actor, I think. And
yeah,
he's like, you know, sometimes it's out of your control, but if you are truly a professional, you will do and prepare and give it as much as you can for that as you would Good Will Hunting or whatever. That's what determines who, you know, what a professional is, in my opinion, blah, 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 blah. Did you watch Dune Part 1? Because we were chatting, you, me, and your former prick boss, Paul, were chatting in a text.
Right.
And,
yeah, no, I watched it.
Okay. So you saw Part 1. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
All right. Did you do it specifically to go watch Part 2 in the theater, or just because you felt like it was time to watch it?
I think it was more the latter. I'm not going to go see Part 2 in the theater, most likely. But you never know what the weekend brings. Maybe I'll go see it this coming weekend while it's still in the big screens, the IMAX and whatnot. So that would be ideal, but not guaranteed. But I it was kind of like the everybody's talking about Dune 2. I may as well see Dune 1. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my thought process. And it was good. It was extremely well made, beautifully shot. I looked at each scene with kind of the, I knew they went to, like, obviously remote parts of the world here to film that, to have the scope of what they did. And it amazes me that those kind of parts, those kind of places mm-hmm. exist on yes. this planet.
Yes.
But they, it's just so well shot that visually it's a treat.
Yeah.
So much like the Mad Max movies with Tom Hardy, I've said for years that if that movie was not in English, I would still enjoy watching it because it is so beautifully shot and so engaging for the eyes that you're just like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, you talked
and
about
Dune is very, very monotone in that it's all kind of the same setting, but it's still so beautifully shot that you'd be like, what's going on with this? What's happening here?
You talk about seeing movies with certain actors. Denis Villeneuve, the director of the Dune movies,
yep.
That's a guy that I will probably see whatever he does. He's done some good stuff, so I'm a big fan of his.
The directors I never got too much into, but yeah, I should, because I like, you know, I like the cinematography of it. I like the vision of it, and they control so much of the movie that even if the cast is good, if the directing is not, that really hurts it. But
it was
beautifully done.
You know,
and it created a world from scratch.
Yeah.
That you by the end understand.
Yeah. Which
and
is
that's very hard to do.
Yes, very hard to do. And also, you know, Hans Zimmer, I don't know if you're into soundtracks and scores and all that stuff, but I thought that the music was amazing as well.
Yep.
So you know, you've known me for a very long time.
Yes.
Have you ever seen me read a book?
No.
No, I'm not a book guy, which I'm sure will come to as a shock to not many.
There was a theory among me and Andrew and John back in the day that you were actually a functional illiterate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, me and Jacques Demers, you want a Stanley
right.
Cup. So
that's right.
So I know that I don't know if they're making any more of the Dune movies, and if Denis Villeneuve isn't doing them, I don't know, you know, how excited I'll be about it.
Well, of course they're making more.
Well, I know they're making a prequel series on HBO.
No, there's that series and there's a part three.
There is a part three. Is he doing it? Do you know?
I don't know that.
Yeah.
I don't know that. I would be shocked if he didn't.
Yeah. I mean, I know that this has been kind of a passion project for him, but at the same time, I mean, he's already invested, what, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of his life into this, or if not more, right, of this project. I'm sure there's other things he'd like to do, you know what I mean? So I can't blame him if he decides
you gotta finish what you started.
I hope so, but the point I was going to make is there are like 6 books, I believe, if not more.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll read all 6, but I think I am going to get the first book and actually read it, just because obviously there's going to be more there than even, you know, 5.5 hours worth of movies or whatever it is are going to cover. So I'm actually thinking about doing that. So we'll see.
Well, it says that Dune 3 is not been greenlit officially yet, but it will be. And apparently Dunes 1 and 2 were the first book.
Correct. Yes.
So he could tap out and say, I did book 1. Let's let somebody else vision take book 2.
Yeah.
But in December, he told a reporter that the script for Dune 3 is almost finished, but he would like to do something else between now and then. So,
okay. All right.
It sounds like he's involved.
Well, very good.
Yeah.
Anything else to add before we get into the hockey this week?
Did you get the popcorn bucket?
It was not for sale, and we wouldn't have gotten it anyway. Apparently there's
thing, right?
Apparently there. I haven't seen it. No. Apparently there's a sandworm popcorn bucket.
Yeah.
Which I guess if you're a big fan of that, you know, the genre, and it sounds interesting. I don't know that I'd want to really stick my hand down the mouth of a sandworm and pull out popcorn, even though it's not real, obviously. But it sounds kind of disgusting.
The reason it went viral is it looks like a sex toy. And I believe Saturday Night Live had a skit about going to see Dune 2 and having sex with the popcorn bucket while at the theater.
That certainly makes me want to go out and get one.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it looked like, oh no.
Plus, I never buy food in the theater because it's expensive and because I don't really like it, which is coming from somebody who doesn't eat healthy. Yeah. I'm not a big popcorn person. My wife loves popcorn. I don't care for popcorn. So, and we looked, she asked to see how much was a bucket of popcorn. I believe it was over $20.
What?
Yes. So now it might have been refillable. I'm not sure, but
refillable. How much am I eating here? I'm only here for a couple hours.
I hear you, man. I I'm not
$20.
I think it was $22, I believe, is what I.
So at that point, I would stand up. You talk about evolving into a leader. I'll stand up in front of the theater, ladies and gentlemen. Before the movie begins, before the 20 minutes of ads and
oh my God, 30 begin. Minutes of ads. Unbelievable. Before we even got into the previews. Oh my God. Oh.
Go on.
No, that's just, I could not believe the number of commercials. And I guess that's how they're making their money these days. And why this theater that we go to, which usually has like 8 people in it max every time we go, which is why we like to go there, is still open. But my God, I'm like, the movie's, 2.5 hours, and we got an hour of previews and ads. Jeez.
So what time did the screening,
I turned my phone off, but it seemed like, honest to God, it was at least
45. But I'm saying, let's say 7 o'clock was your screening. Or no, it was a 2 o'clock screening, right?
Yes.
And what time would you guesstimate the movie actually started?
Definitely after 2:30. It was unreal.
All right, so what I would stand up before that all began and say, people of Theater 19, I'm going to go get a popcorn bucket. We will all enjoy it. It is unlimited refills.
Oh, boy.
Get a cup. Get something. We're going to fill. Everybody's going to get a little bit. And then
take off your shirts and use it as a receptacle.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The hoodie of your...
Yeah, that actually kind of makes sense, except for... Yeah.
Turn your hoodie around so that there's a trough in front of you.
Grease-filled head.
Yep. And then everybody give me $1 and we can afford this. And you can have unlimited popcorn. Because that's outrageous. $20. Was that for the souvenir bucket?
No. They didn't have the souvenir bucket.
My Lord.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I honestly don't understand how anybody does that.
I don't know.
Crazy talk.
Anyway.
Quick to transition to hockey.
Okay.
Name the people that you said you don't love popcorn. You're not a huge popcorn guy.
Yeah.
Name the people that you've seen in NHL media rooms over the years that love popcorn.
I don't know. Brian Kennedy? I don't know.
Well, it wasn't our friend Dave Taylor.
Oh yes, Dave Taylor does love his popcorn. Yes,
one that would head back and immediately.
And guess what? No popcorn anymore in the press box at the Crypto.com Arena.
None at all.
No, I don't think so. I think they got rid of it. They got all kinds of candies and stuff now, M&Ms and gummy things and whatnot.
Well, the Popcornopolis were heady times.
Yeah, and even for someone who didn't really like popcorn that much, I would have some of that. But even that wasn't like, oh my God, I've got to have this. This is amazing. Yeah.
It was funny that the horn would sound and many people were already out of their seat and on their way to the popcorn. And one other thing we should say before we transition to full hockey of the last week, somebody that you saw in hockey press boxes for many, many years, and I did as well, will no longer be there, I understand. Helene Elliott has retired.
Oh, boy.
And so the press box in Los Angeles and Anaheim just got a whole lot more cheerful. Because that was one sourpuss lady. Great writer.
Yep.
Not a fun human being to deal with.
No. Grumpy old woman.
Yeah, my goodness.
A Hall of Famer, and a groundbreaking female sports hockey reporter.
Yep.
And we wish her well. No. Anyway, let's go into the first period of this. Brian Kennedy somewhere is just choked on his drink or whatever he was.
Yeah, spit out his cake. Yeah.
Let's get into the first period of this week's show. We've got a quick note on every game in the NHL over the past
week. I would like to know an email from Brian Kennedy or a text. I want to know what kind of cake would have to have been at her retirement party for him to attend.
Oh, any. The answer is any.
Free.
He'd go to Satan's retirement for a good piece of cake. Quick note on every game over the past week, and we'll discuss a few of them in a little bit of detail as well. So let's go all the way back to last Wednesday, where we had two games in the National Hockey League. One of them, the Oilers, edging the Blues 3-2 in overtime. Connor McDavid gets the overtime game winner to snap a 10-game goalless drought. Oh, my God. He did have two assists. He's had a lot of assists over his drought of goals, and joke that he's not going to try and score any more goals, just going to give assists. Ha, ha, ha. Zach Hyman continues to score goals for the Oilers. Two in this game, numbers 39 and 40 for him. The Blues did have a 2-0 lead, but obviously then allowed the next three goals in taking the loss, but they do get a point out of it, and they're fighting for a wild card spot, so that is important. Rangers down the Blue Jackets 4-1. Artemi Panarin had two goals, and Igor Shesterkin made 30 saves in net. The Rangers at that point had won 11 of 12.
And Igor Shesterkin had won 7 straight starts. So he is heating up, taking the net back from Jonathan Quick, who is still chasing the all-time U.S.-born goalies wins list and is still on pace to potentially do it this year, but running out of time with starts. And Shesterkin, yeah, 7 straight wins at that point and playing elite level. You know, 41 saves, 39 saves, 39 saves, 30 saves. He's playing elite hockey right now.
All right, let's move on to a busy Thursday where we had 12 games, the final day of the month of February, which had 29 days. The leap day? Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
Leap day? Yeah.
Leap year, leap day.
My coworker, Justin Cooper, the child star of the movie Liar Liar, the producer of The Ben Maller Show, was married on leap day, so he will celebrate his wedding anniversary every 4 years, I believe, is how it works.
That's a cheap bastard right there.
Indeed. on Thursday, we saw the Stars knock off the Jets 4-1 in the battle of the top two teams in the Central Division. Dallas scored 3 goals in the first period to help get that victory. Jake Oettinger had 25 saves in net in the victory. Bruins beat the Golden Knights 5-4. Morgan Geeky gets his first NHL hat trick. Goals 11, 12, and 13 on the season for him. And defenseman Mason Lori gets the game-winning goal on the power play in the third period. Bruce Cassidy, this was not his first game back in Boston as head coach of the Golden Knights, but it was his first game back since winning the Stanley Cup. And he took a little bit of a shot at the Bruins, as he said, "It's good to come back with my shiny new ring on," he said before the game when he was talking to the media. Of course, he was fired by the Bruins, then went to Vegas and won the Stanley Cup. The Kraken beat the Penguins 2-0. Philip Grubauer, 33 saves for his first shutout this season, 21st of his career. Alex Wenberg had a goal for Seattle, one of the two goals, and we'll talk more about him in the second period. Kings knock off the Canucks in Vancouver 5-1. Drew Doughty gets his 14th goal, He's one goal off the lead for goals for a defenseman in the NHL, which I thought was a little surprising. Kevin Fiala gets his 5th goal in 6 games, and Cam Talbot, 23 saves in net. Brock Besser in the loss for Vancouver did get his 35th goal of the year. That was the 6th loss in 7 games for the top team in the West. Panthers down the Canadiens 4-3 in a shootout. Anton Lundell gets the shootout game winner for Florida. Sam Reinhart, 2 more goals, numbers 40 and 41 for him. The 41st goal was a shorthanded goal in the third period that ended up tying the game, and eventually they win in the shootout. Maple Leafs beat the Coyotes 4-2. Austin Matthews, his 53rd goal of the year. He did it in 59 games. Arizona had lost 14 in a row at that point and went 0 for February, 0-12-2 in the month of February. Hurricanes beat the Blue Jackets 4-2 in Columbus. Carolina scoring 3 goals in the second period to help get the win. Brady Shea with the game winner. You had the Predators downing the Wild 6-1 to extend their winning streak to 7 in a row. UC Saros, 33 saves in net, while Nashville had 6 different goal scorers in this one. Islanders beat the Red Wings in Detroit 5-3. Brock Nelson, a pair of goals. Matthew Barzal gets the game winner in the third period, and Pierre Engvall scored the first empty net goal this season for the Islanders. For Detroit, Olli Maatta, defenseman, had both of their goals in the loss, which snapped a 6-game winning streak. Avalanche shut out the Blackhawks in Chicago 5-0 behind a 24-save effort from goalie Justin Onenu. He gets his first career shutout. Zach Parise had a pair of goals for Colorado, and Nathan MacKinnon added his 36th of the year to reach 100 points on the season. He's the first player in Avalanche history to post back-to-back 100-point seasons, which I said, that's not true. So I went and looked, and Philip Forsberg never had back-to-back 100-point seasons with the Avalanche. Neither did Joe Sakic, although he did it with the Nordiques, but not with the Avalanche. Sabres down the Lightning in Tampa 3-2 in overtime. Tage Thompson tied it in the third with a power play goal, and then defenseman Rasmus Dahlin scored the OT game winner. In the loss for Tampa Bay, Nikita Kucherov had a couple of assists. And the Ducks defeat the Sharks 6-4 in San Jose. Adam Henrique and Frank Vatrano, both reportedly on the trading block. We'll update that in the second period. Each had goals. Anthony Duclair, also a player looking to be moved for San Jose, had two goals for them in the loss. A busy Thursday this week.
Indeed, indeed. And it's curious what they... I don't like the separation of Avalanche and Nordiques, because it's not like they haven't inherited their records. And
yes,
they're so saying it was not that a, it was not is a disingenuous.
Franchise. Well, it was not a franchise record, but it was a record for Colorado players, yes.
I mean, I get what they're saying.
It's a gray area, certainly.
Yeah, for sure. Because they wear the Nordiques jerseys every now and then and have some of their jerseys in the rafters. But yeah, anyway, still surprising that Peter Forsberg never pulled off the trick. Though he was never the prolific. He was kind of the Jerome McGinley all-around player. You know, he was never the I'm going to score 120 points a season guy, but he was I'm going to get 80, 85, 90 points a year and also play great physical defense and be an all-around great player. So there is that. The two games, obviously, the Stanley Cup caliber type game between Boston and Vegas in Boston. Boston gets the win there in regulation. Vegas struggling a bit right now, and we're not seeing the caliber of play. Usually teams like Vegas kind of hit their stride as the season ends and kind of go into the playoffs hot. They are certainly not doing that right now. They're struggling a bit. Boston with a nice win had to feel good to get the regulation win, even though they would rather have success in the playoffs, obviously. But we'll see what they can do when the postseason comes around. And then the game that I thought was a great opportunity for the Minnesota Wild to gain some ground in the playoff race. If you're going to make your move, these are the kind of games you got to win in regulation. And they got absolutely blown out by the Nashville Predators. 5-6-1 was the final. They were never competitive in this and let things really slip away in the third period by giving up 3 goals when, okay, we go into the third, we're down 3-1, we need to rally. Nah, there's no rally. In fact, we're going to fold up tent. And so I thought that was the Eddie Garcia death nail for the Minnesota Wild. As if that's the game you can't come out and get a win in regulation to gain some ground on a wild card team, the only wild card team that you're going to gain ground and pass potentially, then it's just not going to happen because you gave them 2 points. It's a 4-point swing, and it was a bad look for the Minnesota Wild, in my opinion.
All right, let's move on to Friday, where we had 3 games. The Devils lose to the Ducks 4-3. Speaking of potential death nails, Lucas Dostal stopped Jack Hughes on a penalty shot with 2.1 seconds to play. He finished with 52 saves. Frank Vatrano, 2 goals in the win for the Ducks. Adam Henrique scored as well. Devils knock off the Flyers 5-2. Capitals knock off the Flyers 5-2. Washington fell by 2-0 in the first period, then reeled off 5 unanswered goals. Alexander Ovechkin had one of them, his 17th of the season, 839th of his career. He's now 56 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time record. And the Coyotes snapped their 14-game losing skid with a 5-3 win over the Senators in Ottawa. Arizona jumping out to a 3-0 lead in the first period. They then, though, needed a Dylan Gunther power play goal in the third to get the win, their first since January the 22nd.
Oh, for February, 1 for March.
Yes.
As soon as March starts, you get a win. Good for them. Had to feel good in the locker room. And they've really obviously fallen off from the pace they set early in the year. I think they started 19-14-2 and were in playoff contention. And I thought they had finally turned a corner. a disastrous February, obviously. If you take that, take February off the books, this team's not bad, but February counts. So, unfortunately. And that was a devastating loss in regulation for New Jersey. They did everything they could. I mean, Lucas Dostal was just great and had an amazing game and stopping Jack Hughes. Although Jack Hughes really lost control of the puck. He didn't really make the save, and he was frustrated, but he stick handled himself out of a scoring chance on that penalty shot. But thrilling end to the game, a win that the Ducks usually don't get against a good competition. Although, how much better are the Devils than the Ducks when it's all said and done? And that's kind of what we're going to get into in the second period. Is the Ducks have 47 points, the Devils have 64, but neither one of them are going to the playoffs. And so it was a bad loss. And Philadelphia, a tough loss as well against the Washington Capitals, as Washington stays alive somehow, some way in the playoff race, and Philadelphia in a battle for their playoff spot as well.
All right, let's move on to Saturday. 13 games to tell you about. We'll start with the Predators beating the Avalanche 5-1 for their eighth straight win. Cody Glass, his first career hat trick, goals 3, 4, and 5 on the season. And UC Saros made 25 saves in net in the win. Nathan MacKinnon did get his 37th goal in the loss for Colorado. Maple Leafs edged the Rangers 4-3 in a shootout. Max Domi gets the shootout game winner. William Nylander scored his 33rd goal of the season in the win for Toronto. Vincent Trocheck had 2 goals, including the game tire with 1:07 left, so the Rangers get a point out of it. Toronto had won 9 of 10 at that point. We did have a Matt Rempe versus Ryan Reeves fight in this one. We've talked a little bit about Matt Rempe. Remember, he made his debut in the outdoor game. He's a 6'7 rookie who's suddenly kind of burst on the scene, because he is fighting a lot. He has 7 career NHL games as we are recording this show, and he has 5 fighting majors in those 7 games, and there has been some interesting debate about him.
Which I don't get. He's been popular, and he's getting attention because he plays for the Rangers. If this exact same dude came into the league and was playing for San Jose or for Dallas, it would not be a national discussion. It would not be getting talk among the NHL. It would just be those guys have a goon. The Seattle Kraken have a guy. Okay, great. Kraken fans would like him. But because he's on the Rangers, now it's a league-wide discussion.
It's just like any other sport when you've got someone who comes onto the scene and plays for a franchise of some note. But it's interesting. I find the debate interesting. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other. But I will say he does kind of have Derek Boogaard vibes, and we know how that turned out. But it's also his life to do with what he wants. And if this is how he stays in the NHL,
hard to tell. He's not going to get there because he can score goals and play defense.
Yeah.
He's going to get there because he's tough. And you know what? He's had 5 fights in 7 games. That means 5 other people have been willing to drop the gloves with him. He's not going out there and jumping people and fighting them that don't want to fight.
Yeah. He even turned down Ryan Reeves at one point, and then later in the game obliged him. But yeah.
So I have absolutely no problem with it. It is still a part of the league. PK Subban, former player, said every team wants this guy on their team.
I don't know about that. That's a little strong.
That's a guy that played in the league for a long time.
PK gets paid for strong opinions. But, do we want to see another Derek Boogaard? No. Really?
Well, Derek Boogaard is an example, but there's plenty of guys that were goons in the NHL that didn't go that path and are still alive and well. Stu Grimson's doing fine.
Yeah.
And his entire career, much longer than Derek Boogaard's, was fighting. That was his, the Grim Reaper, the guy that was his niche in the NHL, and he had a journeyman career as it. So it's not guaranteed to go that way. If it was, they would have long since banned it. But there's far more former goons that are alive and well and than there are that went the wrong path, unfortunately. So that you can't make that indication. In the same sense, we've had NHL players that weren't goons that have killed themselves, and nobody's saying, oh, we should lay off the NHL because of, forget the guy's, I think his name was Rippon.
Yeah.
Brett Rippon. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, I have no problem with Matt Rempe at all. He's entertaining. The fans love him. The teammates love him. I got no problem with it whatsoever. And he knows, just like the goons of the past, that that's what he has to do to stay in the league. That's what he's for out
sure.
there for.
Nope,
and so
for sure.
If he wants to get by on his skill, I'm sure there's a European league or the USHL or something else that can play him. But yeah, he's making NHL money and could potentially win a Stanley Cup. And if he has to throw some hands and fight some guys, so be it. Now, they've legislated it pretty much out of the sport just because you can't take your own helmet off. You have to have the jersey strapped down. They made it much more difficult to have a effective fight. So, but those are for safety reasons, right? So the helmet stays on so that when you fall to the ice, your head does not bash into the ice without protection. So I get it, but I got absolutely no problem with Matt Rempe at all.
Let's move on. We had the Jets rallying to beat the Hurricanes in Carolina 5-3. Winnipeg down 3-0 entering the third. They then reeled off five unanswered goals. Nino Niederreiter had two of them. And Sean Monahan's unassisted goal was the game winner. If you saw it, Carolina goalie Pyotr Kochetkov, who is he can be an exciting player, both positively and negatively, came way out of his net to try and challenge one of the Winnipeg players. Lost that, the puck ended up going over to Sean Monahan, who was able to score.
And empty netter.
The empty net. And it was a 3-3 game in the third. So probably not the best decision by a young netminder there, but clearly he's a guy who can be very aggressive, and he certainly was on that play. Panthers shut out the Devils in Detroit 4-0. Sergei Bobrovsky, 21 saves for his 42nd career shutout. Fourth this season, another goal for Sam Reinhart, his 42nd.
That was against the Red Wings, not the Devils.
I thought it, well, if I didn't say that, then I should have. It was against the Red Wings in Detroit. The Islanders down the Bruins 5-1. New York's Kyle Palmieri recorded a first period natural hat trick. Goals 16, 17, and 18, his third career hat trick. Ilya Sorokin, 22 saves in net for New York in the victory. You had the Flames getting by the Penguins 4-3. Calgary was down 3-1 in the third, scored three straight goals, capped by Yegor Sharangovich's second of the game with 50 seconds to play to get the win. Blues get by the Wild 3-1. Jordan Bennington, 21 saves in net. Jake Neighbors, 20th goal of the year, your game winner. Oilers edge the Kraken in Seattle 2-1. Stuart Skinner, 24 saves in net. Leon Draisaitl hits the 30-goal mark in this one. Sabres surprised the Golden Knights 7-2. Game was tied 2-2 in the second period before Buffalo scored five straight goals. Dylan Cousins had two of them, and they were both shorthanded. Stars knocked off the Sharks 3-2 in a shootout. Jamie Benn in the seventh round of the shootout gets the game winner. Jason Robertson tied it up for Dallas with the only goal of the third period. You had the Lightning downing the Canadiens 4-3 in a shootout. Victor Hedman, the game winner in the shootout in the sixth round. Braden Point added his 32nd goal of the year. Nikita Kucherov had an assist. And the Flyers beat the Senators 4-2. Tyson Forrester had two goals, including scoring on a penalty shot for Philadelphia. And Felix Sandstrom gets the win in net in his season debut. He allowed two goals on 26 shots.
Well, the one I want to focus on first is the Vegas game, because they just got beat pretty handily. And you think, okay, that's not good. Or they lose to Boston in a showdown, and then they go into Buffalo and they get beat pretty handily here. I mean, 7-2 is pretty bad. Aiden Hill was in net for one, Logan Thompson in net for the other. Both of them, they gave up a lot of goals. So the worry there is, what's happening to our goaltending that all of a sudden we can't keep the puck out of our own net? Five goals against Boston, seven against the Buffalo Sabres, who are not great. And I don't think Vegas, I don't know. You get the feeling that to quote a guy that recently retired in the NFL, hungry dogs run faster. I don't see hunger from the Vegas Golden Knights. I see a team that has their rings, and I don't see a team that is hungry to get another ring. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe they'll turn it on in the postseason. But I'm seeing a team that is not playing their best hockey in March now and is struggling to keep the puck out of their own net. And when you give up seven goals to Buffalo, that's not good. So that's a concern if I'm the Vegas Golden Knights, and we'll see what they do before the deadline to address some of the concerns that I'm sure they have. Minnesota followed up a game that we talked about. They said that they had a chance to catch and pass or catch some ground against Nashville. They got blown out. Then they scored one goal against St. Louis. Again, the goals have just not been there for Minnesota this year. So not going to happen. They can be officially sellers at the deadline. It is not going to happen this year. And Calgary continues to baffle me. The team that once they gave up, they started playing their best hockey of the year. And the more players they get rid of, the better they play, it seems. They've traded Tanev, they've traded Monahan, and they now, you know, a nice 4-3 regulation win over Pittsburgh, continuing to play well. And we'll see if they are still sellers at the deadline, but that is that's an impressive team once they gave up, once the pressure was off, I guess, in that locker room of just kind of the, it's not going to happen, so let's just relax and start playing our best hockey of the season, unfortunately. And the Islanders, that win, man, this is not a – you mentioned the first empty net goal all season for them in their previous game. Now a 5-1 easy win over Boston, very impressive win. Too little too late for them, I believe. We'll see when we get to the standings, but they're at least putting up a fight here to try and make the playoffs and salvage their season.
And there was one game I failed to mention because it deserves its own recognition, or because I scrolled down and it just apparently somehow was on the other page.
Blue Jackets, Blackhawks?
That is correct. Battle of the worst team in the East against the worst team in the West. A clash of the Titans and the Blue Jackets get a 5-2 victory in Chicago. Blackhawks goalie Arvid Soderblom lost his 14th straight game for Chicago in that one.
And unfortunately, there was no Adam Fantilli in this one, so we did not get a number one versus number three showdown. We did have Connor Bedard in there. He did have an assist, but no Adam Fantilli, unfortunately. So the one reason you might watch that game to see two of the top prospects from this past draft, one of them was missing, unfortunately.
And Nashville with an 8-game winning streak certainly is interesting. Getting contributions from a lot of players. Cody Glass with a hat trick is certainly not something you would expect. They're getting a lot of depth scoring during this run, which is something they really haven't had all year, which makes me believe that it's just something that's happening at the right time, or you know, they're trying to obviously lock down a wild card spot, but I don't know. I'm not a big believer that this is going to be something that's sustainable. They're still going to, I think, in the end, have to rely on their big guns like, you know, Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi and whatnot. But they are that, you know, if you're kind of wondering, wow, how is Nashville putting this together? It seems like they're getting contributions from some guys who normally don't contribute often, kind of in this condensed run of 8 wins in a row. So good for them.
Well, they're playing well defensively. I mean, one goal against for the Avalanche, one goal against from the Wild. You don't need a lot of depth scoring when you're giving up one or two goals a game.
They've been good defensively all year. What they're not, what they haven't been all year is getting this kind of scoring. So that
Ryan O'Reilly has had a very nice year.
Yep.
Very nice.
A good addition for sure.
That guy has been giving them exactly what they need.
Yeah, he's a good player. Yeah.
I mean, 23 goals, 54 points in 63 games. And in his last 5 games, he has 4 goals. So the guy has been, and his points in all 5 games. So he's been on a heater. And Nashville, I don't know. They're going to be interesting before the deadline, and we'll talk about them as we get into the second period here. But I don't think they're going anywhere when they make the playoffs, but I think they can make the playoffs.
All right, let's move on to Sunday. 6 games, the Kings down the Devils 5-1. Philip Deneau with his second career hat trick, goals 12, 13, and 14 on the season. Cam Talbot had 30 saves in net. Timo Meier scored for the Devils 15 seconds into the game, and that was it. This would be the final game for Devils head coach Lindy Ruff, who was fired the next day. We'll give you the details on that coming up. Oilers rolled over the Penguins 6-1. Zach Hyman, 2 more goals, 41 and 42 for him. Calvin Pickard had 22 saves in net in the victory for Edmonton. Jets down the Sabres in Buffalo 5-2. Winnipeg was down 2-1 going into the third. They then scored 4 straight goals. Morgan Barron gets the game winner. He sounds like a professional golfer for some reason. The Canucks edge the Ducks in Anaheim 2-1. Connor Garland with the game winner and Casey DeSmith, 17 saves in net for Vancouver. You had the Wild beating the Sharks 4-3. Kirill Kaprizov with the hat trick, goals 27, 28, and 29 on the season. He scored the two goals in the third to tie it, and then the third goal was the game winner. It was his third hat trick this season, and he also collected his 300th career point in the process. And the Coyotes beat the Capitals in D.C. 5-2.
Well, an impressive win from your Kings, although the Devils have obviously been struggling, which is why Lindy Ruff got fired after the game. But the Kings continue to roll, seem to have gotten their mojo back and found their game again since the coaching change, since the All-Star break. And they're playing their best hockey since November, certainly in recent months or recent weeks. The Oilers absolutely obliterated the Penguins and just showed them, I think, showed Pittsburgh how far off the pace they are from being anything close to a contender. And I wonder, you and I have been into the locker room of many a losing team over the years. I wonder what the vibe was in that locker room as they kind of, I think it's got to be settling in that they're not going to make the playoffs and the push is not there. But as they look around, they also look at a bunch of guys in their 30s that are signed for many years to come. Erik Karlsson has 3 more years to go. Chris Letang has 4 more years to go. Ryan Graves has multiple years to go, more than 5. Ricard Raquel somehow has 4 years left on his deal. So the guys that they look around and see are the guys that are going to be there again next year. And if you don't have enough right now, what's going to change? Is Brian Rust coming back going to change things? Jake Guentzel next year? Maybe, but it's got to be a tough time in Pittsburgh right now because they went all in to try and get back to the playoffs and make a run this year, and it simply is not going to happen. And now it's a matter of how many moves can they make before the deadline and how do they turn this around? What's their approach in the offseason? That'll be interesting.
More anonymous player having a great year, Zach Hyman in Edmonton or Sam Reinhart in Florida?
Oh, definitely Sam Reinhart, only because Edmonton is covered. Sam Reinhart is having an amazing year. So is Carter Verhaeghe. Florida is having an amazing year, and yet nobody talks about it because they're in Florida. They will in the playoffs. That is a team that, I mean, they're looking like they're going to win the President's Trophy, which is crazy because they eliminated the President's Trophy winner last season in the first round. Yeah. And now they're going to, but this is the hope for New Jersey, in my opinion, is the Florida Panthers. And that's why I'm not ready to completely give up on them. If New Jersey can make the playoffs, I think they have a run in them. They have some very good players. But they may not make the playoffs at all. Florida barely made the playoffs. But once they did, they obviously had a very good run in and made it to the Stanley Cup final. We went into the season last year thinking, and that's the fallacy in the just make the playoffs and anything can happen. And you point to last year's Panthers, your Kings from, what, 2012, mm-hmm. when they were the 8th seed? In both cases, the team went into the season expected to be a Stanley Cup contender. They completely underwhelmed in the first half of the season and then had to rally just to make the playoffs. But they went into the season with high expectations. It's not like Nashville, just get in and anything can happen. Technically, yes. But let's be realistic. Detroit's not making a run to the Stanley Cup final this year. Nashville's not making a run to the Stanley Cup final this year. It's not that kind of a mindset applies to a team that had expectations going into the season and was underwhelming, which I think fits New Jersey. New Jersey was expected to be much better than they are. A lot of people picked them to win their division. They are struggling to even make the playoffs.
Some picked them to win the Stanley Cup.
Some did. But if they make it, I think they could have a run in them. But I don't think they're going to make it. I think they waited too long.
By the way, I was referring to myself and also said Florida wouldn't make the playoffs. So, you know, there's that. Never let it be said I don't admit my...
You come to the Puck Podcast for the expert.
Let's move on to... I assume you were done with Sunday? We're done with Sunday?
Yes.
All right, let's move on to Monday. We had 6 games. The Panthers beat the Rangers in New York 4-2 in a battle of division leaders. Sam Reinhart, 2 goals, numbers 43 and 44. Alexander Barkov, by the way, had a highlight assist where he bounced the puck off his stick a couple of times and then
as he went down, batted the puck over to Reinhardt for the tap-in goal. That is 5 wins in a row and 11 of 12 for your Florida Panthers. Bruins down the Maple Leafs in Toronto 4-1. Pavel Zacha had a pair of goals. Jeremy Swayman, 32 saves in net in the win for Boston. Blue Jackets beat the Golden Knights 6-3. Recently acquired Alexander Nylander gets his first career hat trick. Goals 2, 3, and 4 on the season. That is back-to-back losses to the Sabres and Blue Jackets for Vegas, who had dropped 6 of 7 at that point. Blues got by the Flyers 2-1 in a shootout. Jordan Bennington, 40 saves. Kevin Hayes scoring a goal to help beat his old team in his first game back in Philadelphia. Kraken knock off the Flames 4-2. Defenseman Adam Larson gets the game winner. Andre Kuzmenko had both goals for Calgary in the loss. And the Avalanche blank the Blackhawks 5-0. Second time this week, Colorado has shut out Chicago 5-0. And the second time this week that goaltender Justice Ananou gets the shutout of Chicago. He had 37 saves in this one. Nathan MacKinnon, 2 goals, 38 and 39 for him, and he has extended his point streak at home to all 30 games this season.
If they have home ice advantage, that's going to be a problem for whoever plays them in the playoffs. Big win for the Kraken as they continue to make a push. They're kind of surging right now, trying to get themselves back into a playoff spot. I don't think it's going to happen, but they're at least given, like the Islanders, they're given their best effort. And man, if there is a panic button in Vegas, I think they got to be hitting it. It's not just losing. It's getting blown out. They gave up 13 goals combined to the Blue Jackets and Sabres. And in back-to-back games, where's the structure gone? I get that there's injuries, but where has the structure of this team gone defensively? How has it gotten this bad? And they are playing their worst hockey of the year right now. There's no doubt about that. Not a lot of cap space to go out and make moves. So what you have is what you have, unless you get creative. Now, they did make a move, which we will talk about, but it's hardly a splash that's going to make a big difference.
And we wrap it up with 9 games on Tuesday. The Oilers get by the Bruins in Boston 2-1 in overtime. Leon Draisaitl had both Edmonton goals, numbers 31 and 32 on the season. Stuart Skinner had 25 saves in net in the win. Linus Ullmark, 24 saves in the tough loss for the Bruins. Stars outscored the Sharks in San Jose 7-6 in overtime. Dallas was down 6-3 in the third period. Rallied back, won it on Arupe Hintz, OT game winner. Wyatt Johnston had a hat trick in the win. Goals 20, 21, and 22 for him for the Stars. And in the loss, Anthony Duclair had a pair of goals for San Jose. Kraken edged the Jets in Winnipeg 4-3. Tomas Tatar tied it in the third. Then Andrei Burakovsky's power play goal would be the game winner. Canadians beat the Predators 4-3 in overtime. Nashville's 8-game winning streak is snapped. Nick Suzuki with the OT game winner for Montreal. Canucks get by the Kings 2-1 in overtime. JT Miller with the OT game winner. Thatcher Demko, 23 saves in net for Vancouver. Cam Talbot, 29 saves in the tough loss for LA. Panthers defeat the Devils 5-3 in the first game for New Jersey under interim head coach Travis Green. Nick Cousins had a pair of goals for Florida. Sam Reinhart added his 45th of the year. Florida riding a 6-game winning streak as we are recording this show. Islanders knock off the Blues 4-2. New York fell by 2-0, then scored 4 straight goals. Bo Horvat gets the game winner in the third. Penguins beat the Blue Jackets 5-3. Jeff Carter with the game-winning goal in the third period for Pittsburgh. And the Blackhawks defeat the Coyotes in Arizona 5-2. Chicago snapping a 22-game road losing skid. Chicago scoring 4 power play goals in the win. Defenseman Seth Jones had 2 goals for Chicago.
Look, you walk out of there feeling good if you're Dallas with a 7-6 win, Rupe Hintz winner. But the fact that you needed to rally that much against San Jose is a bit alarming. But you did. You found a way. Kraken, big win over Winnipeg in regulation to get those 2 points. That's impressive. Again, they continue their push, as do the Islanders. And the Blues hurting them with that loss. Florida, that's such a tough matchup for Travis Green's first game behind the bench as head coach for New Jersey. If you're going to try and affect change, playing the best team in hockey is not
good. They've got a tough schedule going forward, too. It's not going to be easy.
Like I said, I think they waited too long on the Lindy change, but Travis Green's a former. Travis Green's got head coaching experience, so he's not new to this game. But still, that's a tough spot to be in. And then Nashville, they at least got a point, so they continue to their surge of the standings of if you're gonna lose, at least get a point for doing it. And you mentioned the saves total for Thatcher Demko. He had one that was potential save of the year.
Yes, he did.
On your boy Alex Turcotte.
Yes, he did.
That left Alex Turcotte looking up at the roof. And my Lord, were you at that game?
I was not.
My goodness. I mean, a two-on-one with Anze Kopitar. Kopitar passes it over to Turcotte, who's got a wide-open net, and elevated it. And Thatcher just threw his body over there and made the save and held on to it. Holy jumping, as former NHL goalie Darren Pang would say. Ten-bell save, my goodness. And that is why Vancouver has belief going into the playoffs that they have a chance to win a Stanley Cup this year for the first time ever, because they've got a goalie that can make saves like that. When everything else fails and it's a two-on-one, he can still make the save. My goodness, what a save. What a game for the Western Conference of the Pacific Division. Certainly
and a potential, the highlight of the night. Potential first-round playoff matchup. Potentially, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you're playing the team that's beaten you the last 2 years.
Yeah, we'll see. It's possible.
Yep.
Anything else before we get to the standings?
No, sir.
All right. We'll start in the East, where I don't believe we had any movement from a week ago. In the Atlantic Division, you've got the same top three as last week. Florida, 90 points, most in the NHL in first place. Boston, 3 points back with 87 points. And then Toronto in third place with 78 points. Metropolitan Division, your top three are the Rangers, Hurricanes, and Flyers. New York with 84 points, Carolina 78 points, and Philadelphia 72 points. And your two wildcard teams, just like a week ago, are Detroit and Tampa Bay, although they both have 72 points right now. But Tampa Bay is the number two wildcard team, Detroit number one. And then you've got the Islanders with 68 points, 4 points out of a playoff spot, and then we'll mention it, but Washington 65, Pittsburgh and New Jersey 64. It looks like it's the Islanders or no one, but we shall see.
If the Islanders make the playoffs, I'm going to say they make it in the Metro as the number three team, that they catch and pass Philadelphia. That's their ticket in.
They're 4 points out in the wild card and 4 points behind Philadelphia for third in the Metro.
Yeah, that's my belief that that's their ticket in.
And they do have two games in hand on Philadelphia.
Right. So in theory, they could tie them if they win those two games in hand, and it would be 72 points each. But that's I think Tampa and Detroit are going to make the playoffs as wild cards. I think you can lock in the Rangers as the champ. Obviously, they've got a 6-point lead over Carolina. I think you can lock Carolina in that second spot. They have a 6-point lead over Philadelphia. Neither team is going to lose that lead over the last 20 games of the season. In the Atlantic, it's much more. I could see Boston catching and passing Florida if the Panthers stumble, and they've won six straight to get this 3-point lead. So it's not like they had a big cushion. Their streak has to come to an end at some point. But Toronto, I think, is locked in at that 3 spot, and they're comfortable there. The problem is they're either going to match up against Boston or Florida in the first round and not have home ice advantage, and that's a very difficult matchup for them.
Toronto with a 6-point lead on Detroit and Tampa Bay for that third spot in the Atlantic. The playoff matchups in the East, the same as they were a week ago, Florida versus Tampa Bay, Rangers versus Red Wings, Bruins versus Maple Leafs, and Hurricanes versus Flyers. Let's go over to the West, and we had some movement in both divisions. Not surprising in the Central because things have been so tight, but Dallas reclaims the top spot, moving up from number two to number one with 85 points. Winnipeg slides down from number one to number two with 83 points, so 2 points behind Dallas. And Colorado has 81 points. They remain in the third spot in the Central Division. And we had movement in the Pacific as well. Vancouver leading the Western Conference with 87 points. They're still in first place where they've been most of the year. Edmonton has moved up from number three to number two with 78 points. And the LA Kings have moved up from the number one wildcard spot to third place in the Pacific with 73 points. Vegas has 73 points as well, but right now they're the number one wildcard team in the West. And Nashville has 73 points. Right now they're the number two team, a number two wildcard team in the West. Vegas dropping from second in the Pacific down to the number one wildcard spot. As far as the teams on the outside looking in, St. Louis and Seattle both have 67 points, so they are 5 points back of Nashville, Las Vegas. 6 points back, thank you. Good math. 6 points back of Vegas, Nashville, and L.A. Then you've got Calgary, 65 points, Minnesota, 64 points.
Yeah, again, I think both, if you're going to look at a team on the outside looking in, the Islanders are the only team in the East that has a realistic chance. And then I know the Blues are there with 6 points out, but they've got 4 wins in the last 10 games. Seattle is playing better in recent games. So I would say they are the only team that's going to potentially come and catch and pass anybody. And at this point, I think they might catch and pass Vegas. Vegas is at risk of missing the playoffs. They have 2 wins in their last 10 games. They are not playing well. The only team that has less wins in their last 10 games is San Jose. And San Jose is awful. So that would be shocking, obviously, to go from Stanley Cup champion to missing the playoffs entirely. But they got to figure themselves out here pretty quick, because it has gotten ugly in recent weeks for Vegas. And if this continues, that would be there's got to have, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but they have to have some games against Seattle left. And if those are head-to-head matchups and Seattle wins in regulation, they're going to start reeling them in. They don't have any games in hand on Vegas. That's the one thing we should mention is Dallas has played 64 games. Winnipeg has played 61. So they do have 3 games in hand and are only 2 points back for the Central Division lead. Winnipeg also has 2 games in hand on Colorado, who is 2 points behind them. So in that advantage, they have that there. But I think Vancouver is locked in. I think Edmonton is locked in at number two. I think the Kings are establishing themselves, unless Vegas turns things around very quickly, as being the number three seed. And then you've got a rematch between Edmonton and LA in that first round.
Third time's the charm.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. But Vancouver is going to win the division and are just getting themselves set to be as healthy as possible for that first round matchup and make as deep a run as possible.
So the playoff matchups, there was some changing from a week ago. And with that Central Division, who knows, it could change week to week. But first round playoff matchups in the West, you'd have Vancouver against Nashville, Dallas versus Vegas, Winnipeg versus Colorado, and Edmonton versus LA. Quick check on your scoring race, race for the Art Ross Trophy right now. It is a two-man race between Nathan MacKinnon and Nikita Kucherov. Both have 105 points on the season. Connor McDavid is still in the wings there with 99 points. As far as your goal scorers, you've got Austin Matthews, who had a bit of a quiet week for him. I think he just had one goal in the past week. He's got 53. That's still good enough for a 8-point lead on Sam Reinhart, who's got 45, and then Zach Hyman with 42. So those are your
amazing scores. That you mentioned the Kucherov MacKinnon. They're having almost the exact same season too. Kucherov has 38 goals. MacKinnon has 39. Kucherov has 67 assists. MacKinnon has 66. So the breakdown of points is almost exactly the same. And the total is the same, 105. Kucherov does have a game in hand for what that's worth over the course of the next 20 games left, though. But that'll be a good race to see who wins that race between those two. You wonder how much they care about that, you know? I mean, it's certainly something you would like to do, but is it in your mind as you take the ice on a nightly basis that I gotta get my points if I can, and hey, we got an empty netter. I'd love to get out there and get a free point if I could, Coach.
I mean, if it's something that can motivate you, that little bit of extra, right? I mean, you and I have worked around professional athletes, and I have always been amazed at the things they'll do, including making up stuff to motivate themselves to perform better. So, I mean, if you can use that, if you're looking to what did Kucherov do today, that kind of thing, if that helps to motivate you, to push you a little bit, then why not?
Stay away from my wife. I remember an NHL or NFL linebacker yelled at a quarterback after he sacked him, and the quarterback was, what? Because he had gotten in his head.
Like something out of a water boy.
Yeah, that guy's trying to
I didn't say anything about your mother.
It was just the confusion on the quarterback.
Please don't hurt me.
What?
Let's get to the news of the week. We will save our trading places report for the second period with the trade deadline coming up this Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. We had our seventh coaching change, though, of the NHL season. We told you about it earlier, but the New Jersey Devils fired Lindy Ruff on Monday. Assistant Travis Green, former head coach in Vancouver, is your interim coach. Devils gave Ruff a multi-year extension before the start of the season, so he's going to get paid a little while to not coach. Devils, several young star players under long-term contracts entered the season among the league's most talked about clubs. They had over 100 points last season, or had 100 points last season. Beat the New York Rangers in the first round of the playoffs. A lot of people thought they would take the next step this season and be a Stanley Cup contender. That did not happen at the time of the firing. The Devils were 30-27-4, not in the playoffs. Ruff went 128-125-28 in 281 games over parts of three seasons in New Jersey. The Devils were 5-7 in the playoffs last year. Ruff lost in five games. Ruff and the Devils lost in five games of the Hurricanes in the round number two. Lindy Ruff was a finalist for the Jack Adams Award last season. Travis Green, I believe he was a former Jack Adams Award finalist as well, was your coach in Vancouver for parts of five seasons. He's got a NHL head coaching record of 133-147-34.
It's just too late. I mean, there's 20-some games left, just over 20 games left. They're buried in the Eastern Conference. They would have to catch and pass Pittsburgh, for God's sake, catch and pass Washington, catch and pass the Islanders, and then catch and pass either the Lightning or the Red Wings. It's just not going to happen. I just don't see it. And it's unfortunate. This is a lost season, a wasted year for the New Jersey Devils. Injuries hurt this team early in the year. Losing Dougie Hamilton for as much as they did kills them on the back end. They never figured themselves out in net. And it's just been a disaster of a season for a team that had really high expectations. But if your goalies are going to be Akira Schmid and Nico Daws, and you're paying them both the league minimum of $850,000, you can't really be surprised. Now, they had Vitek Vanacek, certainly, but you have to have better, again, you have to have better backups in case your goal, in case your starter goes down, than these two. And I get that they were high on Akira Schmid, but you got to, especially once you see how the season's going, you got to make a move.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go and get a goalie from somebody and try and address the problem. That's why, that's what the GM's job is. So Tom Fitzgerald waited way too long to start making moves and addressing the shortcomings of his roster. You knew Dougie Hamilton was out. You knew the goaltending was not up to snuff, and they never did anything. And yep. Now they wait until just over 20 games left to fire Lindy Ruff. Well, it's too late.
Yep.
I mean, especially as you said, they got a tough schedule. They're in it. They're so buried. You needed to do this at the All-Star break when the Kings made their coaching change and try and reset and get things going again. And they didn't. And, you know, when you lose to the Ducks in regulation, that's not good. Those are points you got to get when you're fighting for a playoff spot. And I don't think Lindy Ruff was the problem. I think the goaltending and the defense were the problems. But still, you got to – it's the first thing you do in the we need to make a change, we need to get things going is fire the coach. So Lindy's out. He gets it. He's been fired from jobs before. We'll see if he gets a job again in the NHL. I think he has certainly earned one if he wants it, but he's also not a young man, and a lot of times they go for the wave of the future in the NHL rather than the retreads. I think he could be a good interim guy next year if somebody needs a shot in the arm. Things aren't going their way. 14 teams have changed head coaches since the end of last season now. My goodness. Rent don't buy if you're an NHL head coach.
Yeah, agreed with everything you said on that one. So we move on to some signings and roster moves this past week. Elias Pettersson gets an 8-year, $92.8 million contract with the Vancouver Canucks, average annual value of $11.6 million. The forward could have been a restricted free agent after this season. 25-year-old who was in the final year of a 3-year, $22.05 million contract where he was making $7.35 million a year, said before the season that he preferred not to negotiate a deal during the year, admitting that he wasn't sure if he wanted to commit to a short or long-term deal, but obviously that changed. At the time of the signing, Peterson had 75 points this year, 29 goals, and 46 assists in 62 games. He was the fifth overall pick in the 2017 draft, 398 points, 165 goals, 233 assists in 387 career NHL games, all with Vancouver, and also had 7 goals, 11 points in 17 playoff games.
It's a lot. And I guess it's the cost of doing business, but when I saw the number, I thought, I don't think Elias Pettersson is worth $11.6 million a year, personally. That's a bit high for me. But he's been great. And when you draft somebody and they fulfill their potential, you have to reward them with the contract that they've earned. And you can't be the team that's just like, well, that's great. Thanks for doing everything we ever wanted you to do. We drafted you fifth overall, and you've become the player we wanted you to be. Good luck out there. We'd like you to take less than you're worth. He doesn't have a 40-goal season, but he has just shy of it, 39 last year. He had 102 points last year. So if you're looking at a guy that is a perennial 30-goal scorer, which he has become, that's three straight seasons, and a guy that has the potential to score 100 points, even though it was just the one. He's got 76 this year with still 18 games to go. I guess that's, you got to commit to him, but it just seemed like 11.6 to me seems like the absolute upper tier of what guys are worth in the NHL right now. And I don't think he's there. I think he's just that step below. He's an A player. He's not an A-plus player. And the A-plus guys get $11.6 million, in my opinion. But I can't argue against, you know, paying him what he's worth. And I guess that's what it comes down to, is what's the going rate for players right now. You look at the guys that are making more than him right now. Auston Matthews, guy's the best goal scorer in the league. He's going to have 60 goals this year. Artemi Panarin, a guy that is a perennial 100-point guy, a 40-goal scorer. He's been fantastic. Connor McDavid, the greatest player we've probably ever seen, certainly since Gretzky and Lemieux. And then Nathan MacKinnon, who's won a Stanley Cup, is in pace for the Art Ross Trophy and is one of the best players in the league for many, many years now. I don't think he's in that group. I don't think Elias Pettersson is in that group. I think he's in the next group of Mitch Marners, who make 10.9, you know, a million less, and I'm all right with it. It was the 11.6 that I just said, man, that's a lot. And they better hope the salary cap continues to rise, because that is a lot of money.
Interesting week for longtime Washington Capitals center Evgeny Kuznetsov. He was cleared to return to practice after spending time in the league's player assistance program. He was then placed on waivers by the team, cleared waivers, and it was sent down to the team's AHL affiliate in Hershey. 31-year-old is in the sixth season of an eight-year, $62.4 million contract. He's owed $8 million next season. Because of that, obviously, he was unclaimed by any other team in the league. He has 17 points in 47 games this season. He was the Capitals' leading scorer during their 2018 Stanley Cup run.
That is it's a volatile week right there of getting approved, getting waivers. And then you wonder why nobody takes a flyer on that guy, right? Like the bad teams that with cap space, it's not worth taking a risk of claiming that guy just to add him to your roster. Seems odd. I've never understood that.
I don't think I would have done it.
If you're the Coyotes?
Yeah. I mean, he's trending in the wrong direction and he's got off the ice issues. I'm good.
All right. I mean, you need to get NHL talent in some of these cities, and that's a way to do it without giving up anything. I'm not saying he's going to change the direction of your franchise, but does adding him make you better than you were the day before? Probably.
New York Rangers agreed to terms on a one-year contract extension with veteran goalie Jonathan Quick, worth $1.275 million for next season. He's 38, joined the team that he grew up rooting for on a one-year $825,000 deal last summer after being with the Vegas Golden Knights in their Stanley Cup run. Quick is 13-5-2 this year, 2.45 goals against average, 916 save percentage in 21 games, 20 starts. The two-time Stanley Cup winner and Conn Smythe Trophy winner in L.A., four wins away from overtaking Ryan Miller to be the winningest American-born goalie in NHL history, and 12 wins away from 400 for his career.
I was surprised by this only because of his age. I know he's played well this year, but goalies are so finicky from year to year that I don't trust him at 39 to be what he is this year. But the Rangers know him well. They know what he's the condition he's in physically and are obviously very comfortable with him. He was motivated to do it. I have no doubt he was happy to sign anything they put in front of him. But I don't know if I would have done this if I was the Rangers. I would have said, well, let's see how this season ends before we make a commitment there.
Nashville Predators center Tommy Novak signs a 3-year extension through the 2026-27 season. He'll make $3.5 million annually starting next season. He's 26 years old. He was set to become an unrestricted free agent. He was on a 1-year deal worth $800,000, so a nice raise for him. 13 goals, 34 points in 52 games this season. Minnesota Wild side defenseman Zach Bogosian, 2-year extension worth $1.25 million a year. He's 33, was in the final year of a 3-year deal, making $850,000. He had signed with Tampa Bay back in 2021. He was going to be an unrestricted free agent. New contract takes him through the 2025-26 season. He's got 1 goal and 8 assists in 9 points in 47 games for the Lightning and Wild, although all of his points came with Minnesota. And the Carolina Hurricanes signed forward Max Comtois to a 1-year contract worth $775,000. He's 25 years old. He'd been playing in the AHL with the Chicago Wolves this season, where he had 12 goals and 28 points in 45 games. Had 9 goals and 10 assists in 64 games for the Ducks last season. 38 goals, 86 points, and 210 career NHL games. Let's get to the ER report. The Vegas Golden Knights place Captain Mark Stone on long-term injured reserve. He'll miss the rest of the regular season. They say he's questionable for the playoffs.
A tradition unlike any other.
Yes, indeed.
Mark Stone being placed on long-term injured reserve to give them cap space before the deadline so that he can return for game one of the playoffs.
Stone suffered a lacerated spleen against the Predators on February the 20th. 56 games this year. He has 16 goals and 53 points. New York Islanders plays defenseman Scott Mayfield on LTIR. He's 32, going to miss at least 4 to 6 weeks. Mayfield had missed the last 4 games of the lower body injury. He missed 7 games earlier this season, apparently with the same issue, so they're going to tell him to finally try and get right. And before he comes back, 41 games this year, he has 4 assists. And the Columbus Blue Jackets announced that forward Kent Johnson expected to have season-ending left shoulder surgery for a torn labrum he suffered in a game against the New York Rangers. The 21-year-old, 6 goals and 10 assists in 42 games this season. Our goal horn this week comes courtesy of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Just hit the button on the bottom.
Quiet you.
if you can find it.
Maybe I should turn it on. Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast. No special guests this week. It's just us. And we are here to talk about the NHL trade deadline coming up on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. But we have had some movement today after pretty much a quiet few days. So things are heating up as they usually do. I thought we'd start, though, by talking about the teams and who's a seller, who's a buyer, and whatnot. So tell me what you think about this list. So here are the clear sellers, in my opinion. And this certainly isn't, there's not a lot of controversy with this, but you've got the bottom teams of the league.
By the way, I will plug for those of you that are Patreon subscribers. Thank you. There is you probably already know this, but there was a exclusive content trade deadline preview posted this past weekend, as we talked about, that went through all 32 teams, what they should be doing before the deadline, and why.
All right, so your clear sellers are the Blackhawks, Sharks, Ducks, Blue Jackets, Senators, Coyotes, Canadiens, and Flames, even though the Flames are still hanging around a wildcard spot. They've obviously declared with the moves they've made so far that they are looking to sell. They've already sold off pieces. They're going to trade Noah Hanifin at some point, we expect. So they're in the sellers list. Teams that are probably sellers would be the Sabres, Wild, Devils, Penguins, Capitals, and Kraken, even though there are some teams there obviously that are still keeping some hope alive that they could maybe sneak into a wild card spot. But those are probably sellers as well. I think there's some teams that could go either way. Looking at the Blues, Islanders, Flyers, Lightning, Red Wings, and Predators. And then teams that are obviously looking to add or maybe at least stand pat, not looking to sell off anything. All your big contenders, so to speak, Panthers, Canucks, Bruins, Stars, Rangers, Jets, Avalanche, Oilers, Hurricanes, Maple Leafs, Kings, and Golden Knights I have on here.
Different than the list I have.
Okay, go ahead.
I will say that. I don't know why you have Buffalo as a possible seller. They should absolutely be a seller. But the obvious sellers that there's eight of them. And as you mentioned, the Blackhawks, the Coyotes, the Ducks, the Sharks in the West and in the East, the Blue Jackets, the Canadiens, the Sabres, the Senators. Those are teams that should obviously be selling because they suck and there's no reason not to. The sellers that shouldn't be sellers but are because they're still in contention are Washington and Calgary. I'm not sure why they're selling, but I get it. They are, so that is what it is. And then the sellers that aren't selling, I don't think, but should, but they won't admit it to themselves that it's not going to happen. The Penguins, the Wild, the Devils, the Kraken, the Islanders, the Blues, the Predators, and the Lightning. Those teams should all be sellers, which means the other teams should be buyers. And there's a difference between being an aggressive buyer, you're all in to try and win the cup this year, and a cautious buyer, if there's a good deal, you make it. The aggressive ones, I agree with a lot of the teams you mentioned, the Hurricanes, the Oilers, the Maple Leafs, the Panthers, and then in the West, the Kings, the Jets, the Stars, and the Canucks. And the cautious buyers that should answer the phone but not be making the phone call, the Flyers, the Bruins, the Red Wings, the Rangers, the Avalanche, and the Golden Knights. So that's how I see it, and I get into all that, why and what players should be on the move, over on patreon.com/puckpodcast for those of you that have not already checked it out. But obviously, each team is in a different spot in their evolution, and only one team can win the cup. So that's what I think a lot of teams have to keep in mind is it's not worth mortgaging the future to try and win it this year because half the teams that make the playoffs are going to be eliminated in the first round, and it's going to be devastating. And oh my God, and we gave up a first round pick and we gave up a prospect or we gave up something that we would need in years to come. So don't get caught up in the immediate, and yet we see it happen every single year.
And for the most part, these deals don't have a huge impact on the teams as far as getting a player that comes in and, you know, it just lights the world on fire and carries you deep in the playoffs. It happens, but
there's one or two every year.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, is that you don't know who those players are going to be. I go back to 2003, the Anaheim Ducks. Then the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim made a trade to get Steve Thomas, a veteran forward. It was not a big deal, but he was so good with the Ducks the rest of that year, and they ended up going to the Stanley Cup final. They lost in the Stanley Cup final, but that deal is why they got to the Stanley Cup final. He was amazing, and he brought out the best in a rookie, Stanislav Chistov, that was inconsistent up until that point. So it was just magic for 3 or 4 months, and you never know what deal that's going to be, but it can change the fortunes of a team. And if by the Ducks winning in the first round, that eliminates a team that thought they were going to the playoff, they're going to go further and et cetera and et cetera. So you never know what that's going to be. And every team hopes that the deal they make is the one that's going to be the one. So you have to take that into consideration that there will be one or two of these guys that get moved that are going to be lights out in the playoffs and change the fortune of the team they got acquired by.
And I think back to 2014 for my LA Kings when they won the cup, when they went out and got Marian Gaborik, and he was phenomenal for them in the playoffs. Could have been the Conn Smythe Trophy winner that season. He wasn't, but that was a huge pickup for the Kings, looking at my team as well. So things start off very slow. Things have heated up today. The big trade, I guess, we had early on from our last show would be the Dallas Stars and Calgary Flames doing a deal, which sent defenseman Chris Tanev to Dallas. In exchange, Calgary got Artem Grishinkov, a defenseman, as well as a second-round pick in 2024 and a third-round conditional pick in 2026. The Flames retained an initial 50% of Tanev's salary. The Devils were involved in this as well. They got a fourth-round pick in exchange for retaining a further 50% of Tanev's salary. The Stars also get the signing rights to goaltending prospect Cole Brady.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of these with the teams, a third team being involved just to broker the finances. So when you can, when you make a trade, you can retain up to 50% of the player's salary. And almost all the teams that are looking to be buying are up against the salary cap. So they need to, it's harder to make the deal dollars wise than it is players wise. You can agree on players that should exchange or picks, but how do we make the dollars work? And that's where I think teams like Arizona, Anaheim, any team with a lot of salary cap space, and I'm going to look up the teams right now and see who has the most salary cap in the league right now. Chicago, Anaheim, Nashville, Buffalo, Columbus, Arizona, Detroit, believe it or not, San Jose, Seattle, Carolina. Those teams should be the ones that are brokering these deals and getting free picks, basically. We had nothing to do with this. This was between Calgary and Dallas. But you bring in the New Jersey Devils, we'll take on 50%. So basically, Tanev goes from Calgary to New Jersey. Calgary retains 50% of the salary. And then of the 50% left, Nashville or New Jersey says, we'll retain 50% of that. So Dallas only has to pay 25% of the salary to get Chris Tanev. So that makes the money work for them. And these teams, like you said, they get a free draft pick out of it. It cost a couple million dollars or whatever it is prorated, but you know what I'm saying. These are billionaire owners. I don't ever cry poor for them. But these teams should be brokering. If that's the main thing I would be doing at this time of year, is not necessarily looking to move my players, but if you need money moved, talk to me. I will be the guy that makes this happen.
So that trade went down after we stopped recording our show last Wednesday. The next day, we had the Anaheim Ducks and Toronto Maple Leafs making a deal. The Ducks send defenseman Ilya Lyubushkin to Toronto for a 2025 third-round pick. Ducks retain 50% of Lyubushkin's salary. Carolina receives a sixth-round pick in 2024, as they are involved in this as well. From the Leafs, they retain an additional 50% of the remaining salary, and the Leafs get the rights to forward Kirill Slepets in the deal.
And what was that last name?
I don't know. Slepets?
Slepets is as good as I can tell, yeah. I doubt we'll ever hear from him, but you never know. And I should say, when I say retaining salary and we'll be the financiers, you can only retain three contracts. So it's not unlimited. You can't do this for every deal that goes down. You can only retain three contracts.
And then the next day on Friday, we had the Devils and Avalanche making a deal. Curtis McDermott goes to New Jersey. Colorado gets a seventh-round pick in 2024 and forward Zakhar Barkov.
Zakhar Barkov. And that was an interesting one, only because what does New Jersey want with this guy?
I don't know.
No idea. Way too late to address the defensive shortcomings. And that's not the guy that's going to make the impact. But well, I guess you got to try something.
I mean, yeah. So then things went dark for a few days. We had nothing going on Saturday or Sunday or Monday. Then on Tuesday, we had a deal between the Golden Knights and the Capitals. Anthony Mantha goes from Washington to Vegas in exchange for a second-round pick in 2024 and a fourth-round pick in 2026. Capitals retaining 50% of Mantha's $5.7 million cap hit in the trade.
That was a kind of a splash for Vegas, only not that he's a high-impact player, but they're up against the cap. But again, you mentioned it earlier in the week. What did they do to free up some cap space, Eddie?
Mark Stone,
his annual trip to long-term injured reserve, and we'll see you for the playoffs, my friend. You got it. It's an exploitation that I think the Kings should be using. They should be telling Adrian Kempe, I'm sure you'll be fine before the end of the season. I don't care. You're not healthy until game one of the playoffs, because we need your money to go out and get players before the deadline.
Victor Arvidsson for sure is.
Well, Victor Arvidsson may never play again the way this guy's luck is going. I mean, my God, he gets back two games later, and it's crazy.
So that was it for most of the week. So you're like, wow, things are really slow. Well, things have definitely heated up today. All these deals we're going to mention right now have gone down earlier today.
While we were on the air.
We had the Florida Panthers acquiring Vladimir Tarasenko from the Ottawa Senators. Ottawa gets a fourth-round conditional pick in 2024 and a third-round pick in 2025. You had the Anaheim Ducks and Edmonton Oilers making a deal. Adam Henrique and Sam Carrick, along with a seventh-round pick in 2024, go to Edmonton in exchange for a 2024 first-round pick and a conditional fifth-round pick in 2025. The Ducks retain 50% of both Henrique and Carrick's cap hits, while the Tampa Bay Lightning receive a conditional fourth-round pick to retain an additional 25% of Henrique's cap space. The Oilers also get goaltender Ty Taylor in the deal.
Yes, that was one of the big pieces. That was the big piece the Ducks had, was Adam Henrique. He's been playing well. He's a good two-way centerman that can score 20-plus goals, very good in the faceoff circle, can move to wing if you need him. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. This is a guy that was on waivers a couple of years ago. Nobody claimed him. For the Ducks to get a first round pick for him, I'm very happy with that. For 21 games of Adam Henrique, absolutely great deal for the Ducks. They now have, as I look at it, the draft is, I mean, they already have a lot of they're already the number one prospect pool in the NHL, and they have two first round picks, two second round picks. Excuse me, three third round picks this coming draft. So a lot of draft capital for GM Pat Verbeek.
Colorado Avalanche have been busy today. They made a deal with the Flyers to acquire defenseman Sean Walker, along with a fifth round pick in 2026 in exchange for Ryan Johansson and a conditional first round pick in 2025. And as a Kings fan, Sean Walker was a defenseman for the Kings who was kind of a guide, good player, but certainly not, you know, somebody you would think is a great defenseman necessarily. But good on the Flyers for getting a first round pick for Sean Walker.
Well, he's been much better since he left the Kings and gotten a little bit more of a bigger role, and he's played his way into this. And I heard yesterday that they were close to a contract extension with him.
Yeah, I heard that as well. Yep.
And then the next day, he's traded. So my guess is they've done what they should do, and that is, hey, while we got you here, here's what we're going to offer you this summer. That sound good? Yep, that sounds great. Okay, off you go. Go win a Stanley Cup. We're going to get a fifth-round pick for you, or a first-round pick for you. Now, it's conditional. We don't know the conditions on this. But regardless, we're going to get a first-round pick in exchange for you, and then we'll see again this summer. We'll pick up where we left off. That deal's on the table. Obviously, it's not binding. If you decide to sign somewhere else, we can't stop you, but you know what we've offered you. That's my guess.
Another deal for Colorado of interest for sure. The Avalanche get Casey Mittelstadt from the Sabres in exchange for defenseman Bowen Byram. So a couple of young players being swapped, younger players, I guess, being swapped for each other, but a very interesting deal there.
Well, when you collectively look at it and you say, what did Colorado do here? They changed Bowen Byram into Sean Walker, and they changed Ryan Johansson into Casey Mittelstadt. Does that make them better long-term? Does that make them better this year? I don't know. This is a team that knows their roster well, has won a Stanley Cup in recent years. Collectively, I don't know that it's an interesting pair of moves. I'll say that. I get the Adam Henrique deal because he's a guy that when you get into the playoffs, he's a guy that can win you a crucial faceoff, is not going to kill you defensively, and can contribute just enough offensively to be valuable and gives you a strong third line potentially down the middle. But I don't know about these two deals for Colorado. Of course, they didn't give up much long-term. That conditional first, we'll see. But keep in mind, the Avalanche first-round pick is usually around 30th overall, 28th. So it's not the cream of the crop at the draft at that point.
There were a couple of players who were healthy.
We got scratches. Another deal.
Hold on. We had a couple of players this week that were healthy scratches in anticipation of them being traded. One of them was Jason Zucker in Arizona. The other was Alex Wenberg in Seattle, and he was dealt today to the New York Rangers in exchange for a second-round pick in 2024 and a fourth-round pick in 2025. The 2025 fourth-round pick belongs to Dallas. Kraken are retaining 50% of Wenberg's salary.
And that just makes the Rangers that much deeper. I had them not in an aggressive buyer, but that's a pretty aggressive move to go out and get Alex Wenberg. And their offense now is pretty scary deep if they get into a playoff matchup with somebody. With Shesterkin playing well, with Adam Fox, a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman, Jacob Trouba, a physical defenseman in his prime, I'd like to see them make a move to add some defensive depth. I think they're pretty thin there. If anything happens to their top guys, I'd like to see them make a move there before the deadline. And there is still time left to do that. But their offense now is pretty loaded when you look at the depth and the options that they have for line combinations now that you add Alex Wenberg in there. And he's in his prime, 29 years old, unrestricted free agent this summer. That's a good move for the Rangers and just makes their offense that much tougher to stop.
Some other names that are out there could be available, probably as far as the forwards go, at the top of the list would be Pittsburgh's Jake Guentzel. We mentioned Frank Vatrano for your Ducks is someone who's looking to be on the move here. Mentioned Jason Zucker got taken out of the lineup in anticipation of being a trade.
Yeah, I don't think Vatrano will get traded.
Okay.
He's under contract for next season. He's a 30-goal scorer. And I get answering the phone, but he's playing tonight against Ottawa. They're not holding him out. So they're not worried about keeping this guy healthy for a potential trade that's on the cusp. And when you've got a 30-goal scorer that's under contract for less than $4 million next season, I wouldn't actively be looking to get rid of that guy on a team that needs to score goals. Next year, they can trade him.
Tyler Toffoli's name of the Devils has been brought up, but the Devils say that they do not intend to trade him. Then you've got some, you know, Anthony Duclair in San Jose, Max Pacioretty in Washington, Riley Smith in Pittsburgh would be an interesting player. Obviously, Stanley Cup experience with the Vegas Golden Knights last year. So those are some of the forwards that are out there that could be on the move. As far as your defensemen, at the top of the list, Noah Hanifin for the Calgary Flames. They've been openly saying they're going to be dealing him. We shall see. Probably the biggest name other than Jake Guentzel, who would be out there available. Some other names, Matt Dumba in Arizona, Eric Johnson in Buffalo, Joel Edmondson in Washington, Jacob Chychrun. Interesting. His name has been brought up by Ottawa, which they just got him last year in a trade. So I'm not sure why they're looking to move him, but there's a few defensemen who could be on the move. As far as the goaltending, it looks like Calgary has basically said Jacob Markstrom is not going to be traded. So that was the big goaltender name out there. But it looks like Calgary has said, we are going to move pieces, but we're not going to move that piece. That piece is too important to what we're doing as far as
he also has a no movement clause. So he may have just said, I'm not going anywhere.
I don't know. It seems like everything I've read indicates that he would like to be out of Calgary. So I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, there's obviously a dance there, public relations wise, but he has ultimate final say on that. And he still has 2 years left on his deal at $6 million. So it's not just retaining salary this year. It's beyond this year. And that's a problem.
All right. So that's what we have as far as the trade deadline so far. So things obviously very much heating up here as we approach the deadline. So we've had a busy Wednesday. We'll see what goes on Thursday and Friday, but that is the deadline as of this point in the NHL.
Yeah, it's a exciting time of year as a lot of different moves. And with Wenberg, with Henrique being traded, with Tarasenko surprisingly getting moved, and with Sean Walker, a lot of the pieces we've been hearing about have been moved already. And you're seeing it's not a lot of picks or not a lot of prospects. You're not getting players in these deals. It's draft picks. And so that seems to be the one that teams are willing to part with because that's the unknown. And it'll be interesting. We do have was this today? The Nick Seeler contract. Was that the one that they were talking about? Did you have that in your news?
I did not. I don't know that it was official, but yes, the Flyers were talking about re-signing Nick Seeler.
Well, they got him to a 4-year, $10.8 million contract. That is locked up. So maybe that was the guy and not Sean Walker that I saw them close to a deal on. And
I heard them talking about Walker as well. So I saw reports.
They got Nick Seeler locked up. 4 more years, $10.8 million, an average value of $2.7 million beginning next season. Chicago Blackhawks horn, my friend.
Time for the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast, and we will get to your emails in just a moment. But we want to say thank you to all of our patrons on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Really appreciate all of your support of the show and of us by being a supporter on Patreon. And again, if you would like to be a supporter on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Shout out to our friend Dave at Tally Hockey Jerseys, tallyhockeyjerseys.com. You can find the Puck Podcast team store where you can find multiple styles of hats, a beanie, and multiple styles of Puck Podcast jerseys, including the new jersey that Dave has made for us. I'm holding mine right here in my hand, a gorgeous jersey. It's a white jersey. It's got black on the shoulders and red stripes on it.
Eddie has unplugged his microphone. He's so excited about this. He's got a white jersey with red stripes. Would you like to continue, Eddie? Eddie is frozen.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello. There we go. All right.
My microphone cord is very temperamental. Red stripes on the sleeves and at the bottom of the jersey. So a new style of jersey for the Puck Podcast. Looks amazing. You guys should check it out and hopefully purchase one and wear it.
What number did you get, my friend?
Always get the number 21. That's my number that I always wear in honor of the great Roberto Clemente. Thanks, Dave, for the jerseys. Really appreciate it. And everybody listening will go check that out and maybe purchase one for yourselves. They are good-looking jerseys, and there's now, I believe, 4 different styles of Puck Podcast jerseys for you to check out. And if you are in need of any kind of custom hockey jerseys, then you need to go to tallycustomhockeyjerseys.com. Dave will personally help you create a jersey, different styles, different colors. And I think the coolest thing is if you've always had a custom crest idea, then he can help you to create that and make your own personalized hockey jerseys. Very cool. And we appreciate Dave being a supporter of the show. I believe it's time to get to the emails. And Doug, you lead us off every week, so why don't you start?
All righty then. Let's start with our friend Andy in Boston. He says, "Dear Andy, the Leafs fan in Manchester." So this is from Andy to Andy. Bruins fan.
This is confusing.
Basically, this is from Andy in Boston to Andy in Manchester.
We could just forward it to Andy.
Greetings. This is Andy, the Penguins fan in Boston. I wanted to write in a quick reply to your experience with different types of sports fans in the UK. To Andy and you in Manchester, you said people will annoy you with Messi and Ronaldo references, but the hockey fans are rare and more informed. In Boston, it's the opposite. If I wear a Penguins jersey, I'll get yelled out about Bobby effing Orr and Crybaby Crosby, and people who barely know anything about hockey will bother the hell out of me. Also, on one occasion during the Penguins versus Bruins playoff game, I was even assaulted in front of a police officer who turned away and did nothing. I even wrote to the podcast about that event years and years ago. My goodness, I think I remember that. I think I remember the details vaguely, but that's crazy. On the other hand, I'm a huge Brighton and Hove Albion fan. I don't know either of their work. And when I wear a Brighton kit out in public, I get so many lovely comments about how they're a fun team and how our manager is very entertaining on the touchline. This may as well be written in a different language. I don't understand what he's talking about. The touchline, what does that even mean in soccer, Eddie? Help me out there. So in Boston, these soccer fans are much more rare, but also much more informed and polite. Just thought you'd enjoy that slight dichotomy of our two worlds, both Andy's. And I hope you also enjoyed the Manchester Derby on Sunday. Oh, and hi, Eddie and Doug. up the Albion and rest in peace, Penguins. Sincerely, Andy in Boston. He's a Penguins fan that realizes his team is done for the season. Yeah, I don't know what Albion. I would not have been able to tell you that was a, I would have thought that was a type of bird. Hove Albion, I've never heard of them. Brighton I've heard of just because I've heard of the city. And the Brighton kit. It's interesting that hockey sweaters, soccer kits, football, basketball, baseball jerseys. And as I said, if you want a hockey jersey, now's the time because Fanatics is taking over next year and they suck.
Our next email comes from Pateri, and he says it's entitled First Feedback Ever. So that's exciting. And he says, hi, Eddie and Doug. My name is Pateri. I'm a longtime listener and first time writer from Espoo, Finland. In fact, this is my first feedback on any platform to any show. Wow. Well, we are honored that we are the first. He says, I decided to write to you because I wanted to thank you for finding the energy to make a great show every week. I'm a huge fan of the Off Ice Report. It makes me feel like the show is from people I know and could be people I would know and interact personally. This is not the case in other hockey podcasts, and those have come to bore me. As for hockey, I'm a Ducks fan and can understand Doug's decision to not watch Ducks games, although I still have watched every game. I had mediocre hopes that hiring a new head coach would have helped to make them more fun to watch, but playing Ross Johnston in every game has burned those hopes. Again, thank you for the show, and I'll write in again, as this didn't feel weird as I thought. And that is from Pateri. I don't know why it would feel weird, but glad you took the time to send in the email. Great to hear from you. And thanks for being a supporter of the show. And,
absolutely.
From
let me give you the let me give you a little bit of the what's to come. And this is the bad part of the trade deadline when you unload the veterans that you have. And you got right now the Ducks have injuries to Troy Terry, Mason McTavish, Leo Carlson, and Trevor Zegras. And they just traded Adam Henrique. So here are the look at the power play units from today's morning skate. Number one power play unit. Ah, we got a power play. Great. Let's get on the ice. Jakob Silverberg, Ryan Strome, Alex Killorn, Frank Vatrano, and Cam Fowler. Not terrible. But the second one is AHL caliber with Olin Zellweger, who's been in the AHL most of the year, Pavel Minchikov, a rookie, Max Jones, Pavel Regenda, and I don't even know, Gaudin. I forget his first name. It's awful. It's awful. They have a terrible roster that they're plating on the ice tonight, and they're charging full price for those tickets. My God, some nerve. But thank you very much, Pateri, for writing in, and here's to better days for the Ducks in the years to come.
Yeah, and he's from Finland. And it does remind me that we have the capability of looking up stats as far as where people are listening and where people have downloaded the show from. And there are certainly a very interesting list of countries where people have downloaded the show from. Obviously, the United States is number one by a large margin. Canada is in second place. You've got the UK in third, followed by Sweden, Australia, Finland, Germany, and Switzerland, all countries. Those are the top countries that are downloading the Puck podcast. As far as the cities that like to download the show, Boston, Massachusetts, number one for the Puck podcast. You've got Vancouver, British Columbia, Helsinki is in there, Stockholm, Los Angeles, Chicago, and Melbourne. Some of these cities where people very enjoy cool downloading the Puck podcast. So
I think that what tells you is that Andy in Boston, the Penguins fan, rather than being assaulted, get yourself a Puck podcast jersey and wear that out on the streets. And there will be plenty of Puck podcast listeners that might stop by and say hello.
A wise, wise suggestion. And we do have downloads in on all seven continents?
Antarctica?
Six. No, we don't have Antarctica. We have six continents have downloaded the show, including some in Africa, not a lot, but it has happened. It's always interesting to see some of these countries where someone has downloaded the show. And that does include, of course, we've mentioned this before, the Isle of Man, which yes. There is somebody who's downloaded the show. Iraq is on here, believe it or not.
I believe it. Military.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So, yeah, very, very cool.
All right, let's get to our next email. It is from our friend Kevin, and he wants to talk about his Philadelphia Flyers. He says, hello, gents. I hope that all is well with both of you. I did not mention, I was doing some yard work this past week, Eddie, just a few days ago, and I was extending from my rain barrel to a new tree that I had planted, a pear tree that I had planted, a hose to use the water we've collected from the rains to water our new tree. And somewhere along the process, I got stung by a bee in my arm, and the reaction has been more severe than any I've had from a bee sting in the past. Yesterday I was pretty much asleep all day, and my arm, which is where it happened, and the bee sting got me right in a vein. So it was immediate pain, and the poison, the toxins that the bee puts into you, you got to get that out of there because it'll continue pumping in once they tear off their abdomen, which is what they do. The stinger stays in your body. You get that out of there, and then you got to get inside. If you don't know, you got to get inside quick because once a bee sting is in you, the pheromones are there, and all other bees that pick up on that pheromone will attack you as well, thinking you are a villain. So I got inside as quick as possible, did not get stung again, but my arm has been extremely itchy. It's hot. You can tell there's a hell of a battle going on in there with the immune system and whatever the bee put into me. But my goodness, that one got me good. So when he says, we hope you are all well, it's been a rough 36 hours, I would say, for this arm of just discomfort, itchiness. I could take a rake to my arm until I bled. It would feel so good from scratching, but I know I don't. So I don't itch it, and I just try and keep my mind distracted. You ever have those itches that you're just like,
yes,
I know I'm hurting myself ultimately, but my God, it feels good.
Yes, I have. Absolutely.
So anyway, Kevin continues. It's been a couple weeks since I last emailed and I had so much to talk about, but this email would be way too long if I tried to fit it all in. In a brief summary, I did my own Star Wars study and asked a variety of different people about the movies. And Doug, you were pretty much on target. That the people that grew up with 4, 5, and 6 love those more than any of the others. Anyone who grew up and saw 1, 2, and 3 loved those more than any others. And pretty much everyone else or everyone disliked 7, 8, and 9. So yeah, it's what you grew up with. It's same with Saturday Night Live. Everybody says Saturday Night Live isn't as good as it used to be. Well, first of all, it's not for you. It's cast by young people, written by young people, performed by young people for young people. So I bet you loved it when you were 20, when you were 16. When you were 25, that's when it was for you. And that's when you probably think, that's when it was really good. That early 90s crew, that was the good crew. Uh-huh. So anyway, it's true. Music, movies, anything. Next was my thoughts on the Stadium Series as a Flyers fan. The NHL can keep the Flyers out of it. First, our record just blows for these outdoor games. Second, I agree with you guys about playing the original six against other teams for the Winter Classic and keeping the Heritage Classic. Then, on special occasions like the NHL anniversary years or significant team anniversaries, a city event and things along those lines, have an outdoor game to celebrate the team. Just my thoughts on that anyway. So what got me to write to you this week was the 20th anniversary of the best line brawl in NHL history, and I do mean that literally. To this day, the Flyers and Senators hold the record for the most penalty minutes in a game with 419. Now, many of you out there may like or hate fighting, but this game was just a powder keg with a very short fuse. Most of those minutes started with only 1:40 left in the third period. From that point on, it took around 30 minutes to play out just the last minute and 40 seconds left in the game. The fight had an all-line brawl, goalie-on-goalie, single matchups, and of course, the title fight between Rob Ray and Donald Brashear, which started the whole thing off. Now, love the fights or hate the fights in hockey, this was not just a Flyers team out to fight someone. This was a fight evolving during the whole game, and it started 5 games before on March 5th, or before March 5th. On February 26th, the beginning of the third period, Martin Havlat slashed Mark Recchi in the face in retaliation to a hook that took them both into the boards. Havlat did not like the fact he was hooked, so he took it upon himself to retaliate. He was given a 5-minute major for intent to injure and a 10-minute game misconduct. He was suspended 2 games as now a repeat offender due to something he did earlier in the season. And his first game back happened to be March 5th against the Flyers. It was also the first game back for Recchi since that game. Remember that the rules were a bit different in 2004. According to Chris Therian, who was asked this week about that night, Hitchcock wanted revenge, and he went on to explain, I believe you have mentioned this in the past, Doug, there was an unwritten rule among the players that in the last 5 minutes of the game, if there is a score to settle, this is when it is done. It was well known that that night that Havlat was a marked man. The icing on the cake at this point was when Jacques Martin decided to put Zdeno Chara and Chris Neal on the ice to retaliate at the next faceoff, and they went after two players not known for fighting. Then Martin sent Havlat to the Box of Shame, name the movie that's from, Slapshot, to serve Zdeno Chara's penalty after the second round of fights. Now, this move was made when the Flyers just said, fine, if you're going to do that, it is now open season, not to mention the move Martin made to sending the two guys out to retaliate. After three more rounds of fighting, the game finally continues for the Flyers to win 5-3. Following the game, the Flyers GM Bobby Clark went down to the players' hallway yelling for Martin to come out of the locker room to answer for his actions. Now, after the game, apparently it took the officials another 90 minutes to get all the penalties allocated to both teams. Up to the minute 40 mark of the third, the total penalty minutes handed out were 22 minutes. 419 by the time it was all over, with 21 fighting majors, 20 ejections, 12 game misconducts, 2 instigators, 2 leaving the crease, 1 roughing, and 1 double minor. Now, a bit of trivia about all this for you. With all this mayhem that just happened, can you tell me how many suspensions got handed out for this game? The answer shortly. I will say none. I'm going to say none because that's the way the NHL was back then. Let's see if I'm right. In the aftermath of that game, it changed the game rules forever. Well, this game and a game that happened 3 days later between Vancouver and Colorado. That was the game when Bertuzzi hit Moore from behind, breaking his neck in retaliation for a hit by Moore on one of Bertuzzi's teammates a month before. That change happened following season with this small following or this small rule in the portion of the rule. Rule number 56, fisticuffs. A player who is deemed to be the instigator of an altercation in the final 5 minutes of regulation time or at any time in overtime shall be assessed an instigator minor penalty, a major for fighting, a 10-minute misconduct, and an automatic one-game suspension. The length of a suspension will double for each subsequent offense. In addition, the player's coach shall be fined $10,000, a fine that will double for each subsequent incident. Now, at the time of this email, the Flyers have made no trades, but the way this team is playing right now, I didn't expect them to make many moves at all. Not that they are pushing hard for the playoffs, it's just Danny and Keith Jones won't jeopardize what they keep standing for. This is a team rebuilding for the future, not just to win the cup this season. If anything, this team might just make one trade, and that is Walker being moved. Good call there by Kevin, as he has already been moved. The Flyers are wanting to sign Seeler to a new deal, but apparently he's asking for $4 million for 2 years, and that's not going to happen. They got a new deal, $10 million for 4 years. So if he gets signed, it won't be till after the deadline. Well, I'm incorrect on that one, Kevin, but you got the Walker trade right. There is talks picking up of a backup goaltender, but only if it comes extremely cheap and with no real big giveaway. They don't need a long-term goaltender with all they have coming up in the next few years. That's not to say if a good deal is offered with the right draft picks and player prospects that something big won't get done. It's just unlikely at this point. Remember, the Flyers have said from the beginning of the season, everyone can get moved. It's all about what the Flyer values. It's all about what the Flyers value the players at this point. To round off this email for Eddie, a few show suggestions. I would be Reacher on Prime Video. He tells you to watch that one. True Detectives on Max. Resident Alien on Netflix. Griselda also on Netflix, just to start. Also, Eddie, no popcorn at the movies? That's just not right. Shame on you, LOL. $20. My God. I mean, I'm not cheap, but $20 for popcorn? You kiss my ass, cowboy. I'll go and make some at home. I can get a whole box of delicious popcorn to pop at home for less than $10. My goodness. The answer to the trivia question is one suspension was handed out as a result of the game, and that was Danny Markov, who got a statutory one-game ban for collecting his third game misconduct of the season. Have a great rest of your week, and hopefully the hockey gods shine down on your teams at the trade deadline. Kevin, the Flyers fan, from parts unknown, but I got to think he's somewhere in Philadelphia. Thank you very much for that, Kevin. Great email, great trip down memory lane. I would imagine that's a game Eddie might look up on his nostalgia trip through YouTube.
I don't think he mentioned the name, but I got to believe that Ray Emery would be involved in something like that.
Yeah, I think he was the fight, the goalie fight. I think that was the one where he took.
He didn't mention his name though. I don't think I didn't.
No, name, and I'm guessing who would be the. Well, Ray Emery for the Senators or the Flyers? Which one was he with? At
that point? I would guess the Senators.
I don't know. That sounds right, but I also can remember him with the Flyers getting in a fight. And the late Ray Emery. Enjoy
fighting. Yeah.
Anyway, great email. Love that. And I'm happy so far with what the Ducks have done at the trade deadline, getting a first round pick for 21 games of a guy that's going to leave anyway. Keep it coming. More of that, please.
All right. My final email comes from Rob, and he is in Arlington, Virginia. And he says, Doug and Eddie, it has been several weeks, and every week I listen, I am reminded I intend to email the show. After a brief glimmer of hope, I now look to the trade deadline, wondering if the Caps can get some good return. There are a few players that might have some value, so we'll see what happens with them. I don't know how they will work to keep a decent core around Ovi to support his goal chase after an awful start this year. The odds are much longer on catching the great one. In your experience, how much stock should fans put in Elliot Friedman? Sometimes he seems like he might as well be saying, I heard from a guy who has a friend who was told there was a rumor that the team might be interested in thinking about filling player's name, end quote. I know he has a long track record following the league, but much of what he says is remarkably vague. When you talk about the blowout game in the developmental league, I thought of the display at the Hockey Hall of Fame that showed the jersey from the Thai hockey team that lost something like 92-0 to South Korea in an Asian tournament. Apparently one player had 31 goals. Can you think of a deadline trade that was widely praised at the time but turned out to have no benefit and maybe even a detriment to the team that was thought to have made a cup challenging deal? I think of the Caps acquisition of Kevin Shattenkirk. He was coveted as a power play quarterback who would help the Caps go deep into the playoffs. Instead, he disrupted what was already a good power play when the coaches put him on the first unit and dropped John Carlson, who already had the chemistry with Ovechkin, to the second unit. It never looked right, and the Caps flamed out in the second round. At least they did not compound the error by overpaying Shattenkirk to stay when he really wanted to play for the Rangers. Since we love any good NHL conspiracies, do you think the league will make sure that Boston University's Mike Greer and Dave Quinn can draft Boston's Macklin Celebrini this year, or is that too obscure? Is it bad that every time I hear new Devils coach Travis Green's name, I think of that nitwit Mike Milbury calling him a gutless puke many years ago, even though I don't even remember why? Keep up the great podcast. I enjoy it every week and find myself checking over and over about 12 hours before it is available to me. Well, thank you, Rob. We appreciate that. I don't remember Mike Milbury calling Travis Green a gutless puke, but that doesn't surprise me. I don't think that the NHL cares about a Boston University connection or conspiracy with the San Jose Sharks. So no, I don't think that's the case. What else? Elliot Friedman. I like Elliot Friedman. I guess anytime you deal in, you know, hearsay and sources and things like that, you know, there's a limit on what you could say, but I've found Elliot Friedman to be reliable and pretty informative most of the time.
I would say just take when he says something, he's telling you what he's heard. He's not reporting what's going to happen. He's reporting what he's heard. And so take that with a grain of salt.
And he's very connected.
He is very connected and very plugged in. And if he hears it, it's usually from a reliable source.
As far as thing, we had asked him to remind us this at the deadline. And now, of course, we haven't really thought about it since then. But anything come to mind for you, Doug, as a deal at the deadline that was widely praised at the time, but then turned out to have no benefit or a detriment to the team?
Not off the top of my head. I'd have to do a deep dive into that and look back at, and again, you got 18 years of our shows to go back and listen to what we said at the deadline, and then you know how it worked out. So listen to what we said back then, and knowing what the results were of the season, take a look. But as for Milbury, he was a coach with the New York Islanders, and he was unhappy with the way Travis Green as a player performed, and he said, quote, he took advantage of somebody who was on the ropes. There's no question it was from behind and against the glass. He's a gutless puke. That's what Travis Green is. That's why he doesn't wear an Islander uniform anymore, and he gets paid way too much, but that's my fault. Okay. And then Travis Green, when he was a coach, was asked something about his coaching strategy. And he said, as a coach, he said, you remember I used to play for Mike Milbury. I do the opposite of what he would do.
Nice.
So two guys that do not have a lot of love for each other. And yeah, Milbury was never short on strong opinions. There was no doubt about that. Our last email comes from Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. And he says, gentlemen, hope you are well. The Buffalo Sabres' big scorers last year are not getting it done this year. They may finish the year without a 30-goal scorer or a 65-point man. Over an 82-game pace, Tage Thompson is producing under the 60-point level. He had 94 last year. Alex Tuck was producing 1.1 points per game last year, which is a 90-point pace. This year, he's on pace for 56. And last year, Dylan Cousins hit 68 points. This year, he's on pace for 48. This is Don Granato's fourth year as head coach, and for a fourth straight year, they will miss the playoffs. He's done a solid job of developing J.J. Paterka, who already has 20 goals, and Casey Mittelstadt, who's now on the Colorado Avalanche, is starting to approach his potential, leading the team in points with 47 to date, so they traded their leading scorer. But it is time for Granato to go. This is an underachieving roster that should be a playoff team with Thompson, Tuck, Cousins, Mittelstadt, Paterka, Skinner, Jack Quinn, and Zach Benson. The forward core is solid. Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, and Michael Samuelsson form a good defensive nucleus. And Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has been excellent in net and has the pedigree to suggest it may not just be a career year. Sabres fans have suffered long enough, and I'm sure GM Kevin Adams has hit his limit. There's a better chance of Jack Eichel requesting a trade back to Buffalo than there is of Granato being the behind the bench next season. Warm regards, Hart in Lake Echo, Nova Scotia. Well, that is a long chance right there. Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of coaching changes. Obviously, teams are going to be disappointed. We've already seen New Jersey make a head coaching change. I think Pittsburgh could say time for a change. Mike Sullivan, we're not getting the results we want from you. And he's not Kyle Dubas's guy anyway. So we got a few new GMs around the league. We got a lot of teams that disappointed. I think we could see a lot of coaching changes this coming summer.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you to everyone who took the time to send us an email. We greatly appreciate it. If you would like to send an email for next week's show, the email address is feedback@puckpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast. We're on Twitter, X, at Puck Podcast. And of course, if you would like to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/puckpodcast. Any closing thoughts, Doug, before we wrap it up for another week?
No, sir.
Well, good luck with your bee sting.
Oh, it's already better. It's much better than it was yesterday. Yesterday would have been tough to do the show. I was tired. So it's much better. But thank you.
Glad to hear it.
And hope you feel better in the near future, my friend.
Appreciate it. And until then, until next week's show, hopefully we'll both be much better. We will say goodbye for this week. Thank you very much for listening. For Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. And we will talk to you next week with another edition of the Puck Podcast.